All right. Let me just, why don't you just say your name and the date, and I'll just check the levels here.
Okay. My name is Clark Lee, and the date is June 20th, 2005.
Okay. That sounds good. I shouldn't need this. Let me just start with, do you have, when I say big meeting to you or annual meeting, I don't know, use whatever term that you think of first, but do you have any maybe your earliest memory or some particularly special or humorous memory or some sort of memory that jumps out to you when you think about?
Not really. Annual meeting to me, well, my earliest memories of annual meeting was that was a good time because everybody came to church from everywhere, so all of us young'uns got to play outside a whole lot. And that was my earliest memories, really, of annual meeting.
Now, was that in what church was that?
That would have been when we were going to High Bluff in that portion of the Alaba Hall Association at that time. High Bluff was where my parents were members at, so that's where we mostly went to church.
Did people come to your house afterwards?
Yes. Yes, we always had company, even on regular meeting times usually, but especially at annual meeting. We would have, goodness, there ain't no telling, probably from 10 to 50 people, according to who all just showed up and how big the families were. And they cooked and eat, and we played and eat. And most of the time we'd have a Sacred Harp sing sometime that weekend, one night or Saturday night or Sunday night one. And that was always a treat to see everybody and sing and the house fill up with people, and quite amazing, really.
That was at your home?
At our home, yes.
Now, at annual meeting time when you were a boy, did you have any role in helping out, or you just got to play?
Oh, I was just young. Well, we did get to help out. We had to clean house the week before. We always did like spring cleaning the week before to get everything cleaned up and ready for company. But beyond that, I was a young and I didn't do nothing.
When they were actually holding the meeting itself, when you were a boy before you joined the church at
17.
But mm-hmm. Then before that, were you actually going to any of the service, or were you outside playing?
Daddy had a rule. You always had to listen to one preacher. He would let you pick which one after they announced the arrangements for the day. He would let you pick which one, but you had to listen to one preacher preach, and then we could go play. Unless we'd been bad, and then he'd just make us stay in all morning. But otherwise, we would have to sit and listen to one. So we'd get to pick which one we wanted to listen to, and after they made the announcements in the morning, and then we would get to go play.
Well, tell me about you joined the church at 17, and then you have been a song leader in the church for much of your life, right?
Yes.
And is that the term that you use within the church, or is it a deacon, or what? The word for the person who lines out, or not lines, but set pitches and starts the...
We don't have particularly a designated song leader as you do in most traditional churches today. Where they have someone that they actually pay or hire or just serves as the song leader of the church. When it came to starting songs in the meeting house, we always left that in the hands of the Lord, and whoever felt burdened to start that particular song, then they would do that. Although primarily, it has usually been a very small group of people that would start songs. And it's more normally, when I was a young man and coming along, there was Uncle Silas, who probably started most of the songs at that time. Uncle Wilson started some songs. Brother Johnny would start songs fairly regularly. Uncle Eddie once in a great while. And those were the main ones. When I came along and after I joined the church, it just kind of fell my way, I reckon.
It seems like the people you're mentioning are people who have, most of them have been song leaders in or singing school teachers.
Yes, they have been, mostly.
So,
or highly involved, anyhow.
So, is there something that you think, even though the spirit is involved, but that the people that have been song leaders have had, that there has to be, it's always been men, for example. What would be the criteria for a qualities that a song leader would generally have within the meeting house?
Well, mostly, a song leader would first need to be, have the ability to pitch where you can sing it comfortably. Two, they would need to have a pretty wide knowledge of tunes and what particular tunes would sing what particular words, because the Lord hymn book which we use does not have tunes in it. It is a words only book. So, but they're all metered. It tells you it's a common meter or a long meter, short meter, particular, whatever the meter might be, and you need to know what tunes will sing what meters of music so that you can start a song in a tune that it will sing in. And like you say, traditionally, most of the leaders have been those that were leaders in Sacred Heart music, and it's, I don't know that there is a connection other than the gift to be able to lead in Sacred Harp was used right on over into the church as a function, because most of the tunes that we sing in church come from the Sacred Harp books.
I was going to ask you, I knew that, but for the radio I want to have somebody else's voice saying it. Are there any other sources for the tunes?
Other than just the oral tradition, no. There are some tunes that we have sang and still sing occasionally that we actually do not know where they came from. We have no written record of the tune anywhere. It's just the tunes that have been passed down through the generations, and we've never been able to find where they came from originally. There used to be a bunch like that, but through the years and with our exposure in later years, especially to many different tune books and a lot of different people, we have actually learned where most of our tunes came from and have been able to trace them back to their original shape note tunes, or realize that this particular tune is where it originated from, although through the years it has transitioned and changed in a few places, but you could tell that this is where this music originally came from.
Did you notice when you joined the Benedite side, were there different tunes or differences in the singing that you noticed that you can kind of put your finger on and describe between what you grew up with and then what you're singing now? I mean, they're sort of
Yes.
Traditions that split in the last centuries, I understand.
There were several differences. Number one was the variety of tunes. When I joined Mars Hill Church, which is in the Bennett side of the Alabama Association, they sang a lot of tunes that we had never sang. They sang a lot of tunes that we had sang, or tunes that we recognized as tunes that we had sang and learned in one particular way, but they, like us, through the oral tradition, had changed in some places, and we knew that this was a variation of some tune that we had sang previously. overall, where I am now, we sing faster than we did at High Bluff and in that portion of the association. And there were not as many among where we go now, there are not as many people that have sang Sacred Harp as a tradition, and most of them had not sang Sacred Harp in many, many years, so they were not practiced in keeping up with tunes and those kind of things. So, and they were not practiced at singing the different parts of the music. They had one or two people. They have one or two people that, when I joined there, that would sing the bass part, or and one or two high tenors, but not very many. Most of the treble singers were pretty much gone. They mostly everybody sang the tenor portion of the song, and that was a big difference for me because we had always sang Sacred Harp and all the parts. We sang the parts in church just as well as we did at the Sacred Harp Sings. One thing that they did in the Bennett side that we did not do in the Crawford side of that split was that in the Crawford side, we never sang solo parts. Fuguing tunes, we never used fuguing tunes in the meeting house. Although we sang them in the songbook, the Sacred Harp book, but we did not use them in the meeting house. But on the Bennett side of that split, where I am now, we do sing fuguing tunes sometimes and use them.
Is that something that you introduced, or that was already
there? No, that was already there, actually. They were not...
But they didn't sing parts. I guess they don't understand how that would work.
Right, right.
They would sing a fuguing tune, but not in parts?
Well, they don't have that many that they sing, but the ones that they did were, it might have a bass part in it, but they would have somebody that knew that bass part from somewhere along the way, whether they picked it up orally or if they knew enough about Sacred Harp that they knew that this was a tune and this was how it went, you know, but they had learned through the years, and so they would, the bass would fill in that particular part. Mostly the high harmony parts, everybody would sing those parts. Only the bass parts usually would be solo parts, but they did do that, and we did not. I mean, that was one of the things we just did not do among the Crawfords. I know that feeling.
Oh, the ornamentation. Because it's faster in the Bennettite side, do you find that there's less... that there's a difference in the amount of, you know, added notes to the main melody, that, you know, that was one of the things that was so noticeable in the very slow, older Crawfordite style of singing. Is that less so on the Bennettite side, would you say, or different, or how would you describe it?
It's less so simply from the perspective of the speed at which you sing, because if you sing fast, then you can only get so much in this little space. But if you take that same space and spread it out over a wider area, you can put a lot more in it. The singers among the Bennett side of the Primitive Baptist do a lot of embellishment, but not as much as would be found in the Crawford side, because they just sang a little faster. And actually, since we have started going there, although we sing faster than we did, I think they actually sing a little slower than they did when we first started going there. So that's not, it's not something that's being lost anyhow.
People to know, or how would you express what the role is of the singing in the meeting house and how it feels or contributes to the service. What's important about that? What is its place within worship, within your tradition?
Well, two things that I would like to elaborate on in that particular thing is that one is in our rules of decorum, in our associational rules, we have a rule that says that all meetings and services shall be begun and ended with divine worship, which is what we call singing. So from that perspective, it's what the churches agreed upon at some particular time, that they would always begin and end their services with singing. And in associational services, they always, they're required by their own rules to close with a prayer. So they have their last song and then they have a prayer and close. Well, no, they don't know. They close with prayer and then they sing a song and dismiss. So, but the main thing for me is, and especially in today's world, we live in a world where our minds are so filled with the needs of everyday living and all the other contrivances that we have come up with to entertain ourselves. And we sing for an hour before we have our preaching service. And that hour of singing is not only an hour of praise to the Lord, but it's an hour of purging my mind of all the worldly cares that we have in this life and preparing you for the preaching service to there's no way to describe, I don't think in words, the feeling that you get inside of you when you sing. It does something to you, to your heart, that nothing else does. Not even the preaching service will give you that feeling. It's only singing that will give you that feeling. And when you sing, there's such a sweetness and such a peace comes inside of you that you just can't. I hunger for that as much as I do for hearing the gospel preached. And it's, I have described it, maybe this is not a good term, but I've described it that for me, a lot of times singing is like when we were coming up, Mama used to give us working medicine every year to purge out all the bad stuff out of us, or when we felt bad and sickly, she would give us working medicine. You know, well, that's what, in effect, that's what singing does for me. It works. It purges out all those bad things and lets you fill up with the good things, things that have real meaning and merit to them.
There's the singing, just sort of the group singing at the beginning of the service, and then during the service there are certain portions where hymns are lined.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything special about lining a hymn, or why is something lined at some point and not others, or was there more lining in the past than there is now? Is there a special function, like right before, trying to think where it is it before communion that but there's a point in the service where only certain times does lining take place now?
Lining in itself, and I don't know this because we weren't born back then, but I feel like that was simply a tradition that evolved because many years ago people did not have they didn't have hymn books available. Many at that time were illiterate and could not read, so if they'd had a book it wouldn't have done them any good. So the tradition of lining a hymn where the minister would he would read two lines of the hymn and then they would sing two or three, however the song is versed. And when they sang those, then he would line two more lines, and they would actually line the whole song that way. And they still do that traditionally in the Alabama side of the Crawfordite side of the Alabama Association. They still line all of their songs. Among the Benedites, we do not line all of the song. Most of our ministers will line the first two lines of a song. And that really does nothing more than give the people a starting point. They know that when he finishes lining this, we're going to begin singing, and then we sing the whole song. There is no particular requirement to line a song. Sometimes we do not line, and it's just according to how the servant might feel that serving at that particular time. It's not required by any manner or means. And some of the ministers now will just say, sing at will, and that's what the brethren do, or the church does. But mostly, and it really is, it's just a tradition. It's not required by any means, but it just provides a if you line a song, the first two lines, that gives everybody the signal that now is the time to sing, and they're more apt to start and sing together.
Am I missing it, or when the first two lines are lined? I mean, some preachers don't even pitch it. They just say it. Some will pitch it. Mm-hmm. So when you pitch it, is the tune embedded in there somewhere, or is it just... I mean, how do people know what... I don't hear the tune, so how do people know what tune... I guess there's two questions here. Is the tune supposed to be embedded in that lining when it's pitched? And if not, how do people know what tune they're going to sing?
Okay. Lining, just like pitching, preaching, and the different gifts and manners of preaching... Everybody lines different. Some people simply just read two lines like they would be reading out of a book. There are ministers that have a gift of lining that it really is a gift to them that they can, they line like they preach in essence. I mean, they're given a tune and it's not the particular tune that the song may be sung in because there may be most of the time, there will be no connection between the manner in which it's lined and the tune that the song is actually sang in. The lining of itself is a gift. The people that do that they're given their own particular tunes, and usually you will find that particular tune that they line in for a common meter tune will always be the same. Or a long meter tune, because the meters are different, then it's just like a song. You have to change the tune a little bit. And there'll be much similarity between the two, but there'll be a little bit of difference because the meters are different. But it's, and it is a tune of itself, or a song of itself, however you want to put it. But that particular gift is seen less and less as the years go by.
But you have it. I think you have it. So, and people have, besides me, have said you have it. So I'm just wondering, the tune that you have, and you preach with a tune, I guess, at least, I don't know if you would use that term,
yeah.
But it's a gift. Can you describe, are you aware of the tune? I know that Tali has spoken of certain preachers of his coming up that were known as gifted preachers that
mm-hmm.
had a tune. He gave some names of ones that he
mm-hmm.
remembered. I don't know. How do you think you came to that?
Well, First off, I've never really considered myself a liner to start with. If there is a tune there, and to be honest, I have not lined enough to recognize myself that there was any tune there. But if there is, it's just something that was given to me. That's all I could tell you.
I guess I'm speaking now. I'm switching to the tune, the pitch, the tune that you used when you preach.
Okay. So, okay. From the preaching aspect, well, it's just a gift, and that's really about all I can tell you about it. It comes of its own free will, and it leaves of its own free will. And while it's there, I try to follow what's given to me, and when it's not, I figure it's time to hush and sit down.
But is that something, I guess I was confusing the two, but you were saying there's less people that...
Line hymns.
Line hymns, but what about, are there also less people who...
Who line with a tune.
Well, line with a tune, period, or maybe I'm comparing apples and oranges, but also preach with a tune, because, I mean...
Oh, okay, yes. Well, not necessarily. Most preachers that I know, anyhow, among our faith, just about all of them have a tune when they're inspired. There are a few that do not... They simply talk to you as a teacher would talk to a student, you know. But those among the Primitive Baptists are more rare than not. I have visited some over the last years, and even among the progressives, along with the Primitive Baptists that we have visited in other places, although they might not speak, or they might not, most of them speak with a different voice than they would if they were just talking to you. Even those that just talk to you, there is usually a change in their voice set somehow. I don't know what causes it or why, but mostly there will be a change in their voice from normal speaking to preaching voice, I reckon would be a good way to put it. What many people say to us about preaching or our manner of preaching is that they call it singing the service or singing the sermon. And I guess it is, but it's something that I really can't describe it. I don't know how to describe it. I just know that it comes and it goes. And
so you're not really conscious of it, just it's something.
And I don't hear it myself. As strange as that may sound.
And how about in the to me, the prayers, once they become more, the person praying becomes more kind of taken over by the prayer, that also begins to have the pitch. Is that I guess I'm wondering if you've seen any change since you were a boy to now in how things sound, or the frequency of certain of the older ways of doing things. I mean, I know you've changed
only
size, but that's been fairly recent.
Right. Not really. Even with the changing of where we go to church versus where we went to church, there's not that much difference. in preaching or in praying. Although on the prayer side, there are more servants that pray in a talking voice, I reckon would be a way to say it, rather than in a singing voice. But from the preaching side, most everybody has their tune. And it will not always be the same. I mean, it varies too, but I reckon it's according to the... I don't know why it's like that, but it is.
Oh. I'm sorry,
go ahead.
Oh, then we never did get to how people know what tune to sing. Is it just like the person, I know that you ask sometimes, you know, when you want this tune or that mm-hmm. tune to a particular request. So the person who's leading starts the tune, and that's the cue to people as to what tune?
Mostly. Although, and that's one difference, I guess, between the Crawfordites and the Benedites, is that among the Crawfordites, we had less hymns that we sang to a particular tune than we do among the Benedites. Most of the tunes that we sing today out of the Lord hymnal among the Benedites are, we have a particular tune or tunes that we sing that particular set of words in, that they have just traditionally sang to over the years. And the Crawfords did that to some extent, but we never defined that you sing this particular tune, words to this particular tune, whereas among the Benedites, we mostly do. I mean, today I can go through my hymn book and many times, and especially if there are several different tunes that we sing that to, I know that because I've made notes that, well, Elder Johnson's requested this hymn and he likes it in this particular tune, so why start that tune if I start it? Or if somebody else selected it and they have another tune that they like it in, then I'll start it in that tune. And that's why I ask sometimes, because we may have, and there are for, I don't know how many common meter or long meter or other meters of tunes there might be. There's some tunes that there are only one particular tune that we know that will fit that particular meter of words. So that's the only tune that we sing that in. But if you've got a common meter song like Amazing Grace, well, there's hundreds of common meter tunes, and you can sing the words of Amazing Grace to any of those common meter tunes, or long meter, or whatever the circumstance might be. So if there is no particular tune that we sing a song to and somebody wants to sing it, then we just start a tune, whatever comes to our mind that's in that meter that seems like it might suit the context of the words.
Is there ever anything pre-planned about what particular text is going to be sung at a particular point in the service? Or is that all inspired at the moment?
Well, I can say there's nothing written down. And mostly nothing planned. There are some ministers that every time they get up to give out a song, they have a particular song that may have just been given to them, or maybe the words in some way relate to what's on their mind to speak about. And I have had that to happen a few times, but mostly the particular songs don't bother me. Generally, I ask if there's anything left on our list that we haven't sung, and we'll just sing the next one. There have been a few times when there would be something particular a particular subject on my mind to speak about, that I knew there was a particular song that was in that same venue, so I would offer that song, but there is no given.
So, for example, you look at the Lloyd Hymnal and there's different themes. You know,
that's from, right.
Like you're going to do foot washing. Is it common to do a song from the foot washing section or about foot washing if you're going to have communion or if you're going to do that, or is that not necessarily the case?
Not necessarily the case. Some people, I reckon, are more attuned to the different sections of the book, but most people never realize they're there. In all, quite all honesty, most people don't even realize there are different sections of the book. I think about that sometimes, but mostly when I think about that is when it's... when I may look in a particular section would be communion time more than any other. If we're having an ordination service, more than apt, the songs would come from that section that's for ordinations. If they have a fasting service anywhere, they'll usually use songs from that particular section of the book. But there's no requirement, and really it's left up to whoever's serving as to what they sing.
Is there anything else I haven't asked you about the singing in particular that you'd like to add?
I can't think of nothing right off, really.
Let me then just close with if you had anything that comes to mind, if I asked you what is special to you or different or significant about the big meeting time as opposed to other times of worship and gathering?
Well, in many ways there are much the same from the perspective that when you go to church to share your fellowship and love with one another and to hopefully give praise to God and to request His blessings in your life and the lives of all others. But the annual meeting versus the regular meeting time is special because, for one thing, it's only once a year. It's an annual event, which... the thing that sets it apart from a regular meeting is that at the annual meeting time, all of the churches that you are in correspondence with that can be there will come, and you actually receive them into your home as a part of your home for that particular meeting. Where if I go and visit a church on a regular weekend, then I am from another church. But at annual meeting time, we are from another church until we come to that point in the annual conference where the churches are actually joined together. And then we become one body at that particular time with no... without recognizing that we are from other churches because we come together as a body, which I reckon should be all the time. And people don't, and when I say as one body, that is from the business perspective because we're always one body wherever we go. But if on a regular meeting time, if we had a business conference, then only membership of that particular church would be involved in the business portion of that meeting. Whereas at annual meeting time, all the churches come together and all the membership that's represented there collectively all have a part in that business conference. Beyond that, there's not a lot of difference.
Bigger, I
Yeah, right. It's bigger because the, you know, people make a special effort when it's an annual meeting to come. It's kind of like spring cleaning, I reckon. You know, the whole family gets together to spring clean, and kind of the same way with annual meetings. Everybody gets together to be together and to share the joy of the moment. And it does bring a special feeling with it, I reckon, because of the time it is.
Now, one difference about between the Benedite and the Crawfordite, I think I'm right in this, is that the Crawfordites would, if you have dinner at the big meeting, it's sort of separate. Either people go home, or now they were out, you know, kind of around their cars, but as opposed to everybody eating together like they do on the, you know, the Bennett side. I mean, when early on when I went to some Crawfordite churches, it was individual families or groups just going out. And am I right in making that?
That is correct. Right. Among the Crawfordites, and I don't know when this started, because I have been told in times past through the years that the churches used to spread their lunches together. But among the Crawfordites, it evolved into a tradition that mostly, when we went to church, Mother, if there was going to be dinner at church, Mother prepared whatever we were going to eat as a family, and that's what she carried. She always carried a little extra, because sometimes you had people show up that they didn't realize they was going to have dinner, and so they would provide. Somebody would have extra for those that did not have something to eat. But the only time we had dinner on the Crawford side, the only time they have meals is on their communion time or annual meeting time. Among the Crawfords, when they have communion service, they have their normal morning service, preaching service, and then they have intermission, and everybody goes out and eats. Then they come back inside and they have their communion service. Where I go now, among the Bennett side, we don't... Well, one thing is, most of our churches have dinner every Sunday. We have a couple of places that do not have dinner on lunches on Sunday, and that's simply because their membership is so elderly and they're just really not able to prepare meals of their own. Although the other churches would support them and do it, they have just elected not to do that, so they don't have it. But most of our churches have lunch every Sunday after services are complete, even when it's communion time. And although we have our same morning service and then we have communion service, but we always wait to have lunch after we have finished communion service and dismissed for the day.
At Rome, I thought we came back in after the dinner and had communion. I'm misremembering that. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm just fixated on the dinner.
Yeah.
So the attempt to sort of socialize and courtships and whatever, is that part of something that you think of in the context of meeting and big meeting at all, or stories?
Oh, yes, and especially at big meetings, because regular meetings, you just saw the regular folks that come every month. But on annual meeting time, you had the visitors from far off, and that's when you got to see the girls that you didn't normally get to see. And there's been a lot of romances and marriages that have evolved from annual meetings and sings, both over the years.
I guess you stuck with one that you'd seen close to home.
Yes. Yeah, actually I did. I don't know. I can remember the first time that I ever saw Julie, or actually recognized her, I reckon, and saw her as a person. But she was only a child, 13 years old. She was big in size, but she was still a youngin'. Of course, I was too, I reckon. She's 13, so I'd have been 18 or 19.
Was it at a big meeting?
Actually, no, they came to our home to visit. And somehow she just stuck in my mind that day. And
I know it took longer than I said I would take.
That's no problem. And if you need me to come.